are back with episode 377 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I really wish we could get Braun Slim up to level 8 so he could join us for all three of these shows.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I hear he's in a magical place, so maybe one day.
Indeed. All right, well, unfortunately, we do not have Braun Slim with us tonight. I hear that there's been a breach on the fence, and he's had to go take care of that. We sent him out with a stick and a bag full of rats. I think he'll be okay. But in the meantime, we're going to go ahead and cover what we can. And, well, Edmund, I think there's some kind of warning that you need to give to read these people into what we're going to talk about.
They're not clear. Don't do it.
Yeah, no, the warning is that we will be absolutely spoilerific about everything we talk about. So we certainly hope you've watched all these shows. And as always, we've given you about a week or so. So you've caught up by now, we hope.
Yes, we hope. And we're going to go ahead and get started with, well, this show. Oh boy, this is going to be fun to talk about. The Walking Dead, and here's a promo.
Hyundai presents scenes from the next episode of The Walking Dead.
How long will I keep him alive? As long as it takes. Go.
You can't do this alone.
I got this.
Get back in your cell.
When we get past this thing, it's not going to be like how it was, is it?
Open the door!
For more video, go to AMC.com.
All right, and that is The Walking Dead, Season 4, Episode 5, Internment. Multiple enemies put pressure on Rick and the group. Okay.
Wow, are just expository-ing themselves right out into it there, aren't they?
Aren't they, though? Why don't you go ahead and get us started, Gary? What was your highlight for this one?
I like to refer to this one as Herschel's Emmy episode, because it was just that hard to focus. But that being said, in jest, the actor did a good job. Not that he broke out of his character mold at all, in my sense, but you know, the emotions he was expressing, the resoluteness that he carried through, really was well done, and for me, carried the episode, as it really was the focus, and it worked well. I enjoyed the focus more so on him and his willingness to not quit. There was a lot of, I guess, messages in this one, and not that there aren't in this show, but it seemed to be hitting a little fast and furious this time around. And actually, we were joking before the show started, talking about all the Westbury people. But actually, one of the Westbury people probably had the best line of Woodbury guys had the best line of the entire of the entire episode, where he says you have to focus on the ones that can make it. And you know, it's especially in this world, it is so true. And then it rings back to sort of, I guess, in a way, what Carol was talking about too. You can't if they're dead, you got to get rid of them, which is what in a sense she did by killing and killing and getting rid of the two people that she did when they were showing signs of the illness. It's you have to focus on the people who are here, who are well, who are going to make it. And it just seems to be, in a sense, becoming more and more true as we're losing almost everybody except the core cast again. So, which is unfortunate. I wish that didn't happen. I would have loved to see them actually prospering for a little bit longer than the opening of the season episode that we saw in the beginning of the season. I would have liked to see lots of people, functioning in a really effective manner, which would make their sort of breakdown even more tragic. But they never really got above subsistence in the first place. So the fall down with all the people dying and everything, I didn't think had the impact it could have is if they were more prosperous.
Hmm. Edmund, how about you?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I mean, that's certainly the decision to jump, months ahead and to go into this season, so we kind of missed the whole sort of settling into a routine. We just saw it in that opening episode. But what also struck me when Gary was bringing up that very trenchant line and then how it related back to Carol is, I'm kind of realizing it even loops back to some of Shane's points from the first season. Come full circle now to where someone who was arguably more of a villainous character, or at least a problematic character, those ideas are now finally being embraced by someone like Herschel, who was at least sort of trying to maintain a little more dignity or humanity, you know, up until this point. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, Scott Olsen really did just knock it out of the park this episode. And, I mean, in particular, you know, I like that whole buildup of, whether or not he could actually kill someone off. And then, you know, when it gets to that point and, there's no hesitation. He does, you know, just jam the knife, you know, I mean, he has to cover him with a sheet. It's like, you know, okay.
I would have called that hesitation, honestly. He was about to, and then he did have to stop and, you know, pull the blanket over, the sheet over before. So no, I think, you know, it wasn't the casual disregard that we see other people just, you know, plunk a knife into somebody's head. I think where you want to say he did it without hesitation was when he hit Kalo. First he, you know, breaks his arm and then just stabs him. That's the point where I, you know, he did it without hesitation, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's true. But it was just kind of given the build up to it. I mean, the fact that, you know, yeah, I mean, okay, I will accept that it was that moment of hesitation, but then, you know, it was, you know, he did just get the job done. And you know, and so it's certainly, you know, and one thing that's been kind of a, you know, another highlight of this whole sequence, the whole quarantine sequence is, you know, yet another, very well done conversation, you know, through the window this time rather than the two sisters through the door from the previous episode. But, then, you know, him and Maggie, and Maggie finally, you know, having to come in and help, and infection be damned. And it was obvious that things had reached that breaking point where it was, you know, either pull together or be separated and have things get really, really, really bad rather than just really bad. I thought that whole sequence was really well done. And the whole thing at the fence, I actually found a little, in a way, a little odd. I mean, the way there've been so many massacres in Groovy, you'd think that, you know, once the, you know, that sort of breach had happened, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, it was this, you know, sort of awesome action sequence and, you know, breaking out the automatic weapons and, you know, yeah, the, you know, that, sort of look from Rick across at Carl as he's calmly mowing them down. Oh boy, my little boy's growing up fast. Look, but in a way, I was almost surprised that then it was like, you know, okay, so they had just managed to mow them all down, and it's the aftermath, and you know, and that's given how, you know, how much of a this sort of, you know, continuous wave they'd been dealing with, you know, it just seemed a little odd that, you know, okay, they got through it and now they're things seem to be, you know, momentarily okay again. So what did you guys think of that?
I think that they've been building that up for a while now. And at the very beginning of the episode, one of the things that that we were talking about was, you know, oh, you know, they've had that one section that seems to be the focal point, and maybe because it's weak, so that's where they kind of funnel towards. But at the beginning of this episode, there were clearly a lot more than we've seen in the past at that particular spot. Almost, again, like, you know, I've been calling it kind of the leading edge of the herd is slowly but surely making its way towards the prison, and it felt like, yeah, there were a lot more than we've ever seen now populating outside of the prison, and it just feels like this ticking time bomb of a situation that it's going to, this is just the beginning of the end. And it was just, as far as the actual moment, yes, it was kind of, if when you break it down, it's kind of odd because, okay, there's this huge mass of them. It only takes two of them with a couple automatic rifles or semi-automatics to take them down. And then everything is kind of quiet again, which is a little convenient because the gunfire, I would think, would draw everything towards that spot.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's typically what they've been telling us for seasons now. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't get me wrong. I understand they reached some sort, you know, a very critical point, and they needed to. It was sort of their, you know, method of last resort, so I understand that. But yeah, well, maybe they grabbed, for whatever reason, most of that area was congregated in that area. However, you know, in this now quiet world that they live in, a bullet shot probably travels very far.
Well, there's that, and I'm going to say that yes, there was a bit of dramatic license involved because it was coinciding with this really just incredibly uncomfortable situation inside of that cell block. where it just started falling apart left and right. And I found myself that, you know, for much of the episode, I was kind of like, this is a really nice character study for Herschel. This is the kind of depth that we haven't really seen them give this character in a long time. And then it just turns into, you know, one of the edge of your seat moments of the season so far. Because, yeah, I just got done complaining last episode that we haven't had a big moment. And I literally was like, when it finally stopped and went to commercial, I realized that I was practically holding my breath through the whole thing. And it's like, wow, they really did a nice job of just ramping that up. Just letting you see that it's going to go badly. It's going to go badly. And then it just completely falls apart. And yeah, it was very effectively done. So, I mean, while there are some dramatic licenses taken, and I don't think anyone can disagree with that, I just thought that it was done with, you know, really well, perfectly crafted scenes. It's like, yeah, it was a little convenient, but damn if it wasn't effective.
It was a very well executed episode. And I just want to roll back to something Edmund was talking about where they're starting to fire the weapons. I think that was Rick sort of, it almost seemed like his acceptance that, you know, this is the way it's going to be. And that I think he's given up on having to, quote, try and insulate his son from the world. It's sort of, as he saw him, you know, shooting and basically holding his own and taking care of himself, he just had a sort of, you know, I guess this is the way it is. And at least that's what it seemed to me, that it was a bit of acceptance of everything, which is what Rick's been needing for several episodes now.
Yeah, because I mean, I guess certainly, you know, it's getting to that point where Carl kept saying, give me a gun, Dad, give me a gun. And, you know, certainly given the way they'd set things up at the end of last season with the infamous shooting in the woods, it made sense that he'd be resistant. But yeah, once it, you know, they definitely, you know, pushed it to a situation in this episode where he really had to. And yeah, I kind of felt like, you know, that was, you know, I think Gary puts it very well. Kind of reached that point of acceptance of, well, okay, maybe he did have a point, and he certainly acquitted himself very well.
Well, and let's, you know, we as you were saying, Gary, the nice thing is that they are layering in some character development here, and certainly that was part of it, Edmund. What you were saying with Rick and Carl, that was kind of the culmination of a lot of things, and then we also have the growth that Herschel had, and I wasn't sure if they were going to pull something as monumental after Carol's dismissal in the previous episode as taking Glenn out of the picture, but I think that was a nice touch of, right, you know, showing that they were willing to get rid of a long-standing character and then have his life that much in the balance. All that said,
I thought he was safe. I really wasn't that worried.
I don't know.
I wasn't. But no, if it worked for you, then it did work for at least some section of the audience. I found it hard to believe that they would get rid of him, especially after just sort of shuffling Carol out on top of it. I can't see, you know, them axing a main character every episode. You're going to run out of shows.
Nah.
Yeah, my personal sense was, yeah, I mean, I was kind of with Gary of not thinking he was really going to go, especially the way they'd set up the showing us the intubations and, you know, how they dealt with that sort of thing. So it was kind of the moment Herschel started reaching for the equipment, I was like, okay, he's going to go right to the edge, but they will pull him through.
Anyway, now, of course,
I'm sorry we didn't want everyone slaughtered, John. I apologize.
What can I say? I just watch way too much House over the years.
Did we?
I know there's restorative powers of intubation all too well.
They killed off the doctor, John. Can't you be happy with that?
I'll deal with it. All right, but hey, we do get one other big surprise at the very end. Which he was going to come back sooner or later.
Yeah, we figured we've been talking about it for a while, so I guess it's sort of nice that it's actually happened now. But you know, I think almost everyone, you know, saw that the governor was going to be back in the picture at some point. You know, even the casual fan, oh, what happened to him? You know, was wondering. So yeah, it was inevitable. Now, of course, but you still have the big, you know, big questions. You know, how long has he been there? Was he sending the, you know, sending these volumes of zombies towards the prison? What's his plan? So yeah, there's, you know, there's a lot of up in the air stuff, and hopefully it'll make for good writing.
Yep. Yeah, I put some thought into it because last time, you know, we were discussing it, and there was a bit of skepticism, the idea that the governor, one person, could be out there shuffling these zombies, you know, towards the prison. And it kind of occurred to me that it wouldn't take that much to just kind of nudge.
Well, we've already seen it take, you know? It takes a car with its radio blasting is all it takes.
Yes.
You know, it's not like you need a large amount of people. You need a car and with maybe a good CD or cassette player, you're good to go.
Yeah, so I think that it's at least possible. But we'll find out. I mean, he's certainly been very crafty at hiding his intentions over the course of the show. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I just wanted to say, no, about the governor, I am cautiously optimistic. I mean, I feel like part of me is a little worried because it feels like, you know, they've gotten a really good handle on the situation. The writers have a good handle on the situation as it is. But then again, the way Scott Gamble's been running the show, you know, I'm pretty sure he has a good plan for bringing the governor back in. So we shall see soon enough.
Yes. Brunstam gave this one a 9 out of 10. He really enjoyed it. How about you, Gary? What would you give it?
Yeah, I think I'd be inclined to agree with him. It was a great episode. Yeah, I'll give it a 9. You know, one or two things we didn't talk about quick was that little girl, Lizzie. That's still a little creepy the way she was coaxing her pet zombie. And I did think Sasha's talk with Herschel was nice too. I like that. That was a nice little tender moment.
Yep. Yeah. And let's not forget Lizzie's fascination with the blood at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said.
How about you, Edmund?
I'll happily give it a 9 as well. I mean, I've aired my one little quibble, but it was just a little quibble. And overall, this was a very, very strong episode.
I'll make it 9s all around. Okay. Well, there you go. Probably our highest scored episode of The Walking Dead this season. I'll just check that real quick.
So, yeah.
And yes, it is. So there you go. I think deservedly. All right, well, we're going to switch gears a little bit, and probably not going to be the highest scored episode of this particular show for the season, but still, I think, worthy of discussion, and it would be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And let's go ahead and run the promo.
You've experienced level 7. Now...
I'm afraid this mission's classified. Clearance level 8.
CTV next Tuesday. A covert operation.
This is gonna take a while.
With one way in.
What if they're being tortured right now?
Trust the system.
But no way out.
The system sent more than fits in there to die.
Let's hope they're as good as you think they are.
It's the must-watch series of the season. Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. All new. Next Tuesday at 8, 7 Central. On CTV.
All right, and that would be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Season 1, Episode 7, The Hub. Agent Coulson works to save Ward and Fitz after they embark on a Level 8 classified mission that could prove dangerous.
Wait a minute. What episode's that? Coulson did almost nothing to save them. What are you talking about? I'm looking forward to the episode they described, but it wasn't the one I saw. Sorry, John, go ahead.
There wasn't anything more. That's it. That's all that they cleared for the PR.
Oh, boy.
Go ahead. You already got started. You might as well.
You know, I want to love the show. I really do. But, geez, this one wasn't the best show they could have executed. First off, can someone tell me how Simmons is still in S.H.I.E.L.D. after shooting a superior officer in a area that she's not cleared to be in the first place? I'm sort of confused with that being glossed over a little bit.
She's really cute, I guess.
Well, believe it or not, John, that was exactly the answer I expected you to give, and I have it wrote down here because she's cute. Yes, that's exactly what. Yes, that was it. But you know, just to focus on Simmons and I guess then and the Fitz part, they have a really great bond together, and at least for me, I'm not quite sure. Is it like brother and sister? Is it best friend? Is it romantic? I can't quite get a handle on where their relationship is exactly. It's more than professional.
I don't really know. It's like friends that probably should just go ahead and cross the line into romance, but just haven't quite figured it out that that's where they're at yet.
Okay, yeah, it's just something I can't quite nail down myself, so I wanted to get the collective wisdom.
If that's brother and sister, then it's a really close brother and sister.
Yeah, no.
Like I said, I didn't think it was quite that. Yeah, I didn't think it was quite a lot. But
I think I'd go with John as the very close friends who probably keep thinking they don't want to threaten the friendship but should really just go ahead and dispel some tension.
And then not only for this episode, but this is a sort of complaint, as we get to any quote SHIELD base, you really never see anything at all. You know, I'd like to see like a Forbidden Planet style, like access tube going down for like 30 levels or some expansive field or something like that. But here, this is the hub. It's some big thing. I don't think I saw four rooms and two hallways the whole episode. I was like, I'd love some sort of grandeur shot. You know, we're seeing them in some of the promos for the SHIELD movies. Couldn't they like nicked about 5 seconds from the movie production to show us like a bay, a hangar bay with one of the helicarriers in it or something? Yeah, just something to give us a bigger sense that they're going to this big place where everybody meets together and it's a big research center and da 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 da. And we see three rooms, a few rooms and a few hallways. The scope is sort of missing for me. I mean, even just like a setup shot and then switch back, but just something to give me an expanse. You know, we have this, we have that area where they launch things that aren't ready for humans for humanity into space or to the sun. And what do we see? We saw one rocket go up. You still never saw any launch platforms, no support buildings. I'm like, really? I mean, I know they're a secretive – well, I guess they're not that secretive an organization, actually, in this universe. They're pretty much all over the place, and most people seem to know about them. So other than, I guess, hidden bases in a sense, but still, these bases should be big, expansive, high-tech, huge places, and we never get that sense. So that's a bit of a complaint that I've been having with some of the general scenery. I mean, obviously, if they can support something like Coulson's plane, they should have big, massive facilities, and we know they do from the movies. So if they're trying to link things as much as they – say they want to link things, let's see a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Well, I know they are. Yeah, I mean, I there are of course budget issues, but yeah, I think I kind of agree with you that they could give us a little something.
Well, we're going to this big place. Ooh, let's where's the big place? But as I'm saying that, they are incorporating a lot of comic book things into this show, and I think some of it might go over some people's head because they're not versed in it, and that's fine. And I think they're creating a good balance. For example, the device that had to be stopped, the overkill device, or in the comic books for some reason was called the overkill horn. But it did the same thing it described. It stops weapons from miles away, and that was a nice little integration from the comic books, as well as Victoria Hand is also a SHIELD agent in the comic books, as well as Jasper Sitwell, although he's usually a little taller, muscular, and blonde hair in the comics. So it's interesting that he's sort of almost like office guy that's balding. But he did have glasses, so I guess that's about as close as they got to the comic book character with him.
Close enough.
Yeah. So, like I said, I think they're mixing things in well, but it could be better. My last rant before I let somebody else get a word in edgewise is, I'm sick of It's a Magical Place. As a matter of fact, as I thought about that, I've often been pointed out by my fellow hosts how I don't like to see things linger for too long, that I want some sort of payoff. And that's right where I am. I want a little something on that. I want a little something on this already. I don't need the whole thing, but I need a little extra teaser, more than the one line that they've been saying literally every episode, like a mantra almost. I want a little bit more. It's starting to annoy me now.
Yeah, they'll always get the impression that even for Coulson, it's like it's starting to sink in.
You saw him like, this is stupid. Why am I saying this? Look over his face. I'm like, see, even you know it.
I do agree that the way they've been teasing that, they've maybe been stretching it a little too long.
I wonder at SHIELD headquarters if it's a joke and they go over and say, oh, you were in Tahiti, to wait for him to say it. How many times can we get him to say it in the next hour? Oh, we're sending Agent So-and-so to Tahiti. It's a magical place. Do you know anything about Tahiti? It's a magical place. I think it would be a funny joke they could pull on him all day long. But anyway. But it's just my level of frustration over them dragging this out. Maybe not too long, but too obvious. You know, it's just so blatant.
I think that the end of this episode was an indication that they're stepping up a little bit on that. But...
Mm-hmm.
My read on that is that we're, once again, and I've said it a couple times now, I feel like this show is a little bit caught up in the difficulty of trying to weave a season of television around movie premieres and long-term storylines. I mean, we know that the next episode is going to be a coda to Thor: The Dark World. If you saw that, right, you know that there are lots of things that they are putting into place literally years ahead of time, and now imagine that you've got this TV show that is kind of somewhat ancillary to that, but at the same time is fleshing out some of the pieces of the puzzle. And I don't know about you guys, but having seen the trailer, the extended trailer for Captain America: The Winter Soldier, it's extremely clear to me that there are connections to what's going on with Coulson, and some of the hints and allegations that have been in previous episodes, and where things are heading towards that film. So it seems to me like they're almost using Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to be a prelude of sorts, slowly but surely, for the Captain America film. And I could just see the logistics of that being a little difficult to juggle. And that's part of the growing pains of the show. And unfortunately, this episode was a bit of a standard action-adventure show. This could have been... Literally, this could have been an episode of the A-Team. I mean, there really was not that much to this. Other than, like you said, some kind of nice little in-universe jokes for the faithful, but... Yeah. This was to almost be... right out of the playbook. Go ahead, Edmund. Sorry, I kept on going.
It was just So, I mean, certainly the mission itself, I mean, you know, felt very generic. The seasoned agent and the hapless scientist, and the moment you said A-Team, that was what really felt off about all the shenanigans, because I don't think you can call them anything else. I mean, you know, going on with Sky and Simmons, because that just felt like way too, sort of tongue-in-cheek and just sort of haplessly done to exist with the S.H.I.E.L.D. they're trying to set up. It's become obvious that they are setting up this thing of this team being, this sort of odd mix that Coulson's brought together, and them being kind of rogues and not the usual S.H.I.E.L.D. material, but that was kind of brought up a lot at the end, and when it's revealed that no, we didn't have an extraction plan because we kind of knew they'd do it anyway, but the way it got pulled off, and the idea that they could run around doing that at this major S.H.I.E.L.D. base and not have major consequences, it just really didn't feel right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's all wrapped up in my overall concerns about the tone of the show. At this point, I don't think this show is bad by any means. I mean, it's just, I look at kind of the direction that the Phase 2 films are going right now. We've seen Iron Man 3, now Thor is out, we definitely see that Captain America: Winter Soldier is going to be a darker film than the first Avenger film. Captain America: The First Avenger, I mean. And,
yeah.
I mean, I think that, Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be something of its own animal, perhaps. Literally.
Is that a raccoon reference?
Yes, it is.
And, yeah,
But at the same time, I still feel like it's going to be darker territory, that all these films are going to be darker territory than the show is turning out to be. And I think that there is a certain lightheartedness, a certain snark to the show, that while it's characteristic Whedon, I think that it just feels like it's lacking in depth because of that. And the episodes that seem to really work, like the I Spy episode, felt more like what this show, what people expect the show to be like week to week. And so when they have episodes like this, it feels just off. And so, yeah, this felt very much like I said, it was out of the standard playbook of action-adventure shows. There were certain scenes, like the whole thing with Sky and Simmons, that just left you scratching your head and wondering how the heck that was supposed to work. And yeah, I mean, there just everything about the situation felt very contrived. So yeah, I had my concerns, to say the least, about what was going on in this episode, and it wasn't my favorite episode of the show. It might even be close to my least favorite of the season so far. So that's a good place to lead in. Brad Stump actually just gave me his review for this episode. I think he had a little bit of trouble himself trying to pin this down, and he gave it a 6 out of 10. Gary, how about you? What would you give it?
That's right where I was too. It wasn't a horrible episode. It was not a good episode. I almost want to say, as you're saying, it was a little hokey, I guess, for lack of a better word. I know they can do better, and I have to wonder why they dumbed it down so much. And that's at least that's how it felt to me.
Mm. And how about you, Edmund?
Yeah, no, I'm 6 was always popping into my head as well, and didn't even bring up one of the more idiotic parts, which was just having the plane just come in and magically rescue everybody, because, oh gee, the engines can pivot too, so it can, you know, it's a C-130 Harrier, but
you know, everything in S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, can hover, be it a Corvette or a C-130. I'll bet you the golf carts hover, for crying out loud, or the that cart that Fitz was pushing through with his new gadgets, I'll bet you hit a button, that thing hovers.
Mm-hmm. That's why it wouldn't go through the door. Okay, yeah, if you put it on hover, because,
yeah. That moment was, remember, Bronstam made the comment about how it reminded him of the Serenity, and that was perhaps
I don't know how you would
Serenity-esque
get that.
Moment of the season so far for the plane. So yeah, the bus was suddenly suddenly Serenity. I'll agree with the 6, and that, let me just see how that falls out. That is the lowest, by more than a point.
Yeah.
The lowest scored episode so far.
Well, you know, it deserved it.
It really did. And it probably feels worse because the previous episode, the second half at least, was a really strong episode. So, we'll see how it goes next week. Next week's going to be that interesting experiment.
Yes.
You know, what piece of what fallout from the dark world could S.H.I.E.L.D. be dealing with? There's
a leftover dark elf weapon.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, if you stayed through all the credits, there's a fairly obvious one that
comes
to mind, but I'll just leave that as a teaser for anyone who hasn't done that yet. If you're listening to this, by the way, the episode is tomorrow night. Go see the movie already.
Yes, if you haven't. Yes,
for many reasons I say that.
Given the scene you're mentioning, it might start feeling like a Primeval crossover. But
I wasn't
we'll
going to go there. But yes, that had come to mind. But you know, there are people who say that this is the American Torchwood, so that actually fits pretty well.
I'm just not seeing that. It's not. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get unpopular with some people by saying I still think this is doing better. I like this a lot better than Torchwood. So
fair enough. I mean, certainly the first season of Torchwood was very hit or miss, from my opinion. I don't want to get sidetracked, but I would just say very briefly, Children of Earth was my favorite part of Torchwood, and everything else is well below that. So
yeah.
At any rate, Yeah, we'll have much better things to talk about in the Whovian universe soon enough. We can only hope. Cross our fingers. All right, we're going to take a quick mid-show break before we move on to another topic, so everyone stay tuned.
Coulson in a brown coat, I'm going to give up.
Oh, no, that's the next episode. All right, well, let's see. On that thought, we're back, and why don't we go ahead, Gary? I think you've been waiting long enough.
And I know this is, is it time? Is it time?
It's time.
Oh.
It's time to talk about Lost. No, okay.
You know, you managed to go several episodes without referencing it, and I was going to point it out, but then I would be referencing it, so I did not choose to do so.
Let's talk some COVID affairs. Here's the promo already.
COVID affairs? Oh, that little shout? Yeah, that's pretty good.
We're going to get him.
Oh. Next Thursday.
What do you want?
Just Henry Wilcox's head on a spike.
With danger at every turn.
Are you prepared to kill me? From here on out, people get hurt.
How far will Annie and Augie go before there's no turning back?
This feels like we're crossing a line here.
Crossed that line a long time ago.
What the hell are you doing?
This is personal.
We got Wilcox!
COVID Affairs, an all-new episode next Thursday at 10 on USA. Characters welcome.
All right, and we're going back a couple weeks anyway, just to talk about this one, and partially because I didn't get around to seeing the most recent one because of a bit of a business problem, but... Yes, I'm sorry, Canada was not being very nice to me. But anyhow, Covert Affairs Season 4, Episode 14, River Euphrates. Annie travels to New York after receiving new intelligence. Elsewhere, Arthur's court date looms nearer, and Joan finds a solid lead. And a bit of a liquid lead, too, as the case may be. But, Gary, this episode...
Oh, I stopped watching the show. It just doesn't interest me anymore.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh no! I thought this was a great episode. This I guess not that Coulter hasn't been in our group for a while, but you know he makes this ultimate commitment, and you know he's over there with Annie. And oddly enough, it's interesting how Annie's well, I guess she's taking the lead, but I always had the sense that Coulter had been with the agency for a lot longer time, and I'm sort of surprised that he's acquiescing to her leadership so easily. But it is her show, so I guess I have to put some things to the side of plot. But no, I thought this was really good. There was some twists and turns, and this is the twist I'm talking about is, of course, Henry finds out what's happening, and this happened in the previous episode, and it just shows how you can set up the best plan, and all it takes is one phone call to completely ruin it. And this is what they keep running after. And it's that whole thing that, you know, Henry is the better spy. He has better resources and a network that's, you know, sort of keeping him up to date. And he knows what questions to ask. We've often been said that, you know, Annie's outclassed when it comes to Henry. And in a lot of ways, that's exactly what happened this episode, too. She, you know, she had a great plan. It was working out very well. But all it took was one phone call to prevent Henry from getting, you know, picked up. So it's while I'll say it's dragging on the inevitable ending, I don't mind the journey getting there. I like these sort of twists and turns and how Annie keeps trying to come up with new and different ways. You know, as I watch all these amazing ways she's trying to catch Henry, I think back to the first season and how as soon as something didn't work, she automatically had to call in a whole team of, you know, CIA agents to clean up the mess and everything like that. And now, good gosh, look at all she's doing with how little she's doing with it. The chances she takes, the going up to the police with the Chinese, I guess, CIA equivalents telephone, so she gets, you know, captured by the police. Who would have ever expected her to do that? You know, it's almost always, oh gosh, the police are here, we better walk away. No, she walked right up to them. I really like that scene a lot, because it's so counterintuitive to what we would normally expect to happen. But again, it shows the lens she's going through to catch Henry, and the look on his face when she walked up, I thought was very well done. Look on Henry's face, rather, that he was shocked, because with all his planning and all his skill, and even though we say that he's sort of one ahead all the time, I got the sense that he thought Annie was legitimately dead, especially you know, after he thought he had killed Helen. I guess that Helen was that alternate character that Annie was playing for a while. So he just seemed stunned, and I really thought they sort of opened it up. Calder's on his way back with the means by which to convict him. So in some sense, it might be a done deal, but at the same time, she wants to take him down personally. She doesn't want him to be able to hide away somewhere or anything like that. So, you know, it's gotten personal, very personal for her. And you got that sense when she was talking with Augie on the phone. I'm focusing a little bit more on Annie, but it did take up more of the episode. But I thought some of the Arthur and Joan stuff worked out nicely to bring those characters back into a little bit more action. Especially Joan, it's nice to see. I'm guessing from the shooting that she had her baby, she seems a little thinner, or maybe they're doing better camera angles. But I like that they got them into a little bit more action and less, not as much cerebral talking about situations. It was nice to see them get their hands dirty.
And I think we jumped episodes a little bit, but this.
I just watched them nonstop. I can't help myself.
Yeah, just a little preview, but yeah, I mean, on this episode, I did like the whole bringing Calder in, eventually, you know, convincing him, and that interesting little moment at the end when it turns out that we've actually got members of the team working across purposes with each other, although towards the same goal. But they do storm Henry's house to go after him, and that's when it's finally confirmed that Henry is completely onto them and has left the decoy in his place. And I actually really wasn't sure which way that was going to go, but then it all got pretty obvious that, you know, yes, Calder has thrown in with Team Annie and Augie. So the fact that Augie happened to be there as well, ready to snatch him up, they can gloss over that. But certainly the bigger moment earlier was Joan, you know, also having two sides of the team heading in the same direction, and having Joan show up at the Diamond Wholesalers and then walk out and run right into Annie. And I was actually a little surprised. I mean, it did seem earlier in the season like Joan was starting to catch on, but then certainly was genuinely surprised, but obviously pleased that Annie was still alive, and you know, it certainly stayed within character. It wasn't like she was completely thrown and was more than ready to shift gears and start giving Annie the support she needed. So it's to some extent, this is sort of a catching your breath and setting things up for the final episodes. And I guess the other interesting thing was the whole thing of, there was some nice emotional moments at the beginning with Annie telling Augie about Helen's shooting, and then that interesting moment at the apartment with Annie seeing all the evidence of the liaison, which Augie of course couldn't actually see. I thought that was a nice use of his blindness for once, an interesting twist on it. Even though he definitely got the sense, he could sense there was something going on, but also interesting the way they just kept that professional from her standpoint. She wasn't gonna she wasn't making a big deal of it, and getting on with what they needed to get on with. But you certainly get the sense that that's sort of in the back pocket for something to deal with later when. Whenever they actually catch up with this Henry guy.
Oh, geez. Well, I'm sorry I jumped ahead. I can't wait to ever see it. And so I immediately jump on it. But you say that Augie didn't realize it. I thought that they had portrayed the awkward pauses and the way that they were speaking to each other. It was almost unspoken that they both knew what went on. And they were, it seemed there was an uncomfortability in the room, not just Annie's, but even for Augie. Like, he didn't want to be there with Annie.
Yeah,
but he knew that was the only place to see if Helen had any information. So for the good of the mission, he was doing it. But he did not want to take her there, really.
Oh no, that's true. Yeah, but I like the thing of where I think at one point in the scene he does realize sort of the bed still unmade and it was the two wine glasses was the one touch I particularly liked that they were still out. So Annie got a very definite sense of. What might or might not have happened.
Yes, and how long do you think she's been dark, so to speak, at this point? I never quite had that sense. I mean, it seems like a few weeks, but they sort of imply like it's longer.
How long Annie's been dark? Or
yeah. And I don't mean the hair. That's a whole other episode for us to do.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's been all pretty continuous. So yeah, so my sense would be, a few weeks. But
when you see when you think about Augie, going ahead with Helen, and of course, I guess there's some sense that he missed Annie and stuff like that, but wasn't sure if she was ever coming back after Helen had the same thing had happened with Helen, and then you see sort of Joan's reaction too. You get the sense that it's been much longer, but maybe it's just not portrayed well in the episodes. But I have a sense like it's supposed to be months. But
yeah, my sense is maximum of 6 weeks or so. But no, it's not like it's something that's just happened. But
But yeah, it's just a little one of those little pet peeves. It just the way they talk about things, and she says, talks about being on her own. And I was like, a few weeks, really? You go on longer missions than that. Why is this one all of a sudden so much more dramatic and worse? But
yeah, although given the speed with which Joan sort of recovers her equilibrium and slips into being a handler again, it could speak to it not being a huge amount of time.
Fair enough.
I guess we could almost, based on the progression of her pregnancy, kind of figure out how long it's been, but. Yeah. It hasn't been more than X number of months.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to use logic and math into it, well, then you're okay.
Yeah, it tends to happen sometimes. But at any rate, I kind of like the fact that coming out of this episode, it really kind of makes the statement that the last two episodes of the season are definitely going to be the... at least what I anticipate is the end of this Henry arc. It needs to be. If this goes into next season, it's going to be way... Yes. That's too long. I already feel like they stretched it out a bit much.
They really need to wrap up Henry, you're right.
Although then the question is, Henry's been that kind of menace in the background since the first season. So it always just occurs to me, like, okay, yeah. Then what next? But all in good time. All in good time. I gave this one an 8.
Yeah.
I had mentioned that before, so that's a little bit of a teaser. But Gary, what would you give it?
No, I'll give it an 8. It wasn't quite over the top, but it was very good. Yes, I'll go with the 8.
And Edmund?
Yeah, I'm good with the 8 as well. Solid, solid setup to be the finale.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. Let's see. We're going to switch gears a little bit from the order that I have these in the show notes, and we're going to jump over to Elementary. And here's the promo.
Sherlock's sibling is back.
It's about solving a murder.
No. Deduction.
I see him at the mercy of the Holmes brothers.
Meets dysfunction.
Can you just stay out of the eye line?
I'm just standing here.
Yes, that's the problem.
Why are you poking me with your single stick?
Just tell him whether my brother is in there with you.
Oh, dear.
A new Elementary.
All right, and that would be Elementary, Season 2, Episode 7, The Marchioness? Is that right?
Marchioness.
Marchioness, thank you. Sherlock's brother, Mycroft, arrives in New York and asks Holmes and Watson to help him solve a case involving his former fiancée. Sherlock agrees to help, mm-hmm. but finds it difficult to accept Mycroft's close relationship with Joan. Hmm. Edmund, why don't you get started?
Yes, and... Yeah, no, and what I think would definitely be the most awkward case briefing ever. You know, in fact, they even have to get Holmes there under false pretenses, since some people may remember from Mycroft's first introductions that yes, his former fiance was the one whom Holmes seduced and had a tarred affair with, just to prove to his brother that she was no good for him. So,
what a loving family.
Yes. So having her turn back up and Holmes immediately has to start wondering, you know, how the heck did she manage to worm her way back into Mycroft's life enough to call on him to solve this case for her? And certainly this was another instance of them taking something directly from the canon, the Silver Blaze horse, which also meant, for those of us who are familiar with the short story, might have some idea of what was going to be coming down the pike, and sure enough, a little case of swapping the horses and profiting off of stud fees that perhaps they weren't, that they were not entitled to, interesting. It's not really quite turnaround, but you know, yes. Even though she manages to get them to take the case, a nice bit of brotherly cooperation by the end, when it turns out that they do get the case solved, that the Marchioness has been up to just as much shady dealings as she was before, and. I rather liked that ending with the two brothers teaming up to basically make sure that justice was done in the end. Even though the Marchioness herself does avoid jail time, but she certainly gets her comeuppance and has to repay all the people that she ripped off. So I did like those elements of having Mycroft come over and them working together, and I guess the things that the whole thing with the revelation, I guess it was a revelation of the whole of that Joan and Mycroft did in fact sleep together, and Sherlock sort of getting all miffed about that to me felt a little bit like just sort of creating drama for drama's sake, but I've been lathering on enough. So what did you think, Gary?
Don't get me wrong. I like the Mycroft character. It's I like how they play him as a bit of a foil against Sherlock, but at the same time, it just seems to overwhelm the episode for me. And it stops to be the issue intermixed with the personal, and then their personal aspects, their competitions and arguments with each other, and almost trying to one-upsmanship at times, seems to overtake the episode for me, where I almost don't look forward to it. And it's a shame, because the interactions are nice, but for the length, as you go through the show, it becomes almost a skit of the three characters, as opposed to trying to solve the crime involving the races. So I wish I could say I felt a little bit more positive about it. And I know a lot of people like this because Mycroft did come back and he's a very popular character, but he's nice to show up once in a while, but I don't want him here every episode or even every third episode. You know, he to me would be good as a one episode a season sort of show up, or if you want to come up with an analogy, almost like a Q for Next Generation, where, you know, he'd show up once a year, make a big splash, and then we can get on with the rest of the show. I found this much weaker, for, at least for me, than last week's episode. So I guess I don't want to call it stunt casting per se. Maybe they're hoping to dredge up more, and it's humorous. But as for what this show typically is, it felt almost a little out of place.
Well, I can say that Bronze Thumb gave this one a 7 out of 10. What would you give it, Gary?
Yeah, no, I'm going to go with 6. A six. It was better than average, but it wasn't good for me. Just having Mycroft there does not make a good episode for me. I mean, not that he kills the episode, but he's not enough, and I feel his presence takes away.
Okay, Edmund.
Yeah, no, I'm actually good with the 7. I think there was enough good stuff around the case itself, and certainly, I mean, I would agree that it. Having the combination of both them dealing with the ex-fiance and plus all the tension with Joan, I really do wish they had not introduced the whole slept together part of it, because I think I do agree with Gary that it does have a tendency to come close to overwhelming the rest of the show, but the rest of what was going on was still good enough for me to keep it at a 7.
Okay. Sounds good to me. It still comes in a bit low, but it's interesting to note that as Brunslum and I were talking a little bit offline about both Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Elementary, we came to the conclusion, he actually brought it up first, but I agree with him, that both shows suffer from somewhat the same problem, that because they can do such exceptional things sometimes, when they do a very by-the-numbers episode like this, it almost is worse by comparison, and the two shows are really quite close in terms of where they are tracking this season right now. So it actually makes a lot of sense. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Misuse of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...